The Water Values Podcast, session 105.
Welcome to the Water Values Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to water utility, resource, treatment, reuse, and all things water. Now here's your host, Dave McGinnis.
Hello and welcome to another session of the Water Values Podcast. As my daughter Sarah said, I'm Dave McGinnsey. Thanks so much for joining me on this Tuesday, July 4th, 2017. That's the release date of this episode. Obviously, if you're outside the United States, have a great 4th of July. If you're inside the United States, happy Independence Day, and hope you're celebrating well. We've got a great show for you today. We have Bill Brennan, who's an investor in the water space, and he's going to take us on a great journey around the water sector investing space. Keep in mind that, you know, all the, the typical disclaimers apply. We're not providing investment advice on any specific stock or any specific type of investment. So take it for what it is. It's just a general discussion about water investing and all that. So don't rely on this. Always consult with your financial advisor before making investments. We also have Reese Tisdale, who's got a for the Bluefield on Tap segment here, who has a fantastic deep dive into kind of decentralized water and some of the investing that's going on in that space. So without further ado, let's get into the Bluefield on Tap segment with Reese Tisdale. Well, hey, Reese, welcome back to another session of Bluefield on Tap. Great to have you with us again. How's things going?
Things are great. Summertime.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about decentralized water. And today's feature presentation on the Water Values Podcast, we talked to Bill Brennan, and one of the things we talk about is decentralized water. And I'd like to get your take on where you and Bluefield see the decentralized water market.
Yeah, it's something that's come up recently, and I think it's what we've seen happen actually in the power sector with solar PV. We've seen, solar service providers starting to provide, these decentralized power systems, and their financial players that are interested in the space. We've got the technology players that are interested in the space. We have now, in the case of water, we have industrial firms such as breweries, craft breweries and such, that actually have rising wastewater costs. The utilities are putting a little bit of financial pressure on them. They're raising the rates because, quite honestly, the wastewater is high strength, and it's overwhelming their capacity, particularly in smaller areas. One case in particular I know of in Northern California, where there are opportunities for decentralized water systems.
Yeah, so can you expand on that a little bit? You specifically mentioned craft breweries. How are they dealing with this? What are the components they're using to help them deal with these high strength waste issues?
Yeah, so I mean, I think traditionally, obviously, what I think a lot of industrial firms do, they get their water supply from various sources. It could be municipal, it could be groundwater, well water, and such. But the problem is the breweries themselves, they do have this the high strength wastewater, and a good example is in Napa Valley, California, Northern California, where the breweries are, they typically send it to the municipal facility. But in the case of Napa, what's ended up happening is local treatment plants have said, hey, we're going to have to start charging more. So now there's companies, breweries are sending their wastewater by truck to Oakland, to EB Mud. And so what they're doing is they're trucking it 50 miles down the road to be disposed of. Now, I want to say one thing I might add is that EB Mud has taken this opportunity because of drought and what's happened in California more recently. They've actually been exposed to more capacity or have more capacity available. So they're marketing themselves in some respects to companies such as brewers to take on their wastewater. It's been a really interesting dynamic that we've seen happen over the past couple of years. But I think the brewers, in a nutshell, to make a long story short, instead of trucking it, they've realized there's technology and solutions, these decentralized systems that can now be placed on site. So not only can they take the wastewater, they can treat it, recycle it, reuse it for their own needs, but at the same time, there are other options to capture energy from this wastewater. And so we've seen companies like Cambrian Innovation has signed these basically water and energy or water power contracts with the brewers.
Now, are these contracts, are these water energy contracts, are they are they using the waste for like combined heat and power, or you know, how's the what's the energy component? How's that fit in?
They're basically generating heat and electricity on site from the waste, and then you know, in the water that comes off of it and the treatment, they're using that for on site usage.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so and that is a big thing even in the municipal wastewater industry, is that you get your anaerobic digester and start and I don't know if EB Mud is doing this, but you know, when it was taking all that high strength waste and converting it to or at least treating it, so in terms of these power agreements, you know, what more can you tell us about how, what's the incentive for the brewer to enter into this? Do they get to share in the electric, or how's that all shaken out?
They can use it on site. And look, these are relatively new in this case when it comes to these industrial facilities. But I think what ends up happening is they're reducing their operating costs, the energy costs. They're reducing their wastewater treatment costs that they're having to, having to pay the municipal facilities. And then they're actually don't need to procure or draw down as much water. And in a place like Northern California, it makes a lot of sense. Increasingly makes a lot of sense. On the other side, I think what's ended up happening, it basically, you know, flatlines or sets in, you know, they're able to predict what their costs are going to be over time based on operations. The other part of it, which is a key player, which I suspect you'll get into with Bill Brennan, and that is there are a number of financial players that are actually interested in this, in financing these solutions. So if they can string together enough deals, then that's going to be an opportunity on the financial side.
We're in the infancy now of all this. How do you and Bluefield kind of see this market taking off? I mean, is this a real thing? Are these investment companies going to be able to string together these deals, or?
I think so. I think, and I can't recall if we've talked about this in the past, but there's certain markets in the country. I mean, this is one example of food and bev or craft breweries, and which has scaled. It's grown to their 4,200 or so breweries in the U.S. That's one slice of the market. I think we're likely to see things like this happen in other markets, also commercial facilities. San Francisco now has a law in place that requires any facility over 250,000 square feet to install a water reuse system on site for cooling, could be used for toilets, could be used for irrigation on site. But the point is, water rates are getting high enough, industrial and commercial water rates are getting high enough for these companies that it's becoming an option. Now, what does that mean for the future of water? It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out for municipal utilities, because over time, are people going to be pulling off the water network and reusing, becoming more efficient? Increased efficiency for water utilities is not always the best thing. You know, they've got capacity, they've got it in the ground, they've got it to deal with this. So if people become more efficient, revenues go down, and then they've got overcapacity in some cases.
Yeah. Well, I've got a consultant. I think I've said this on podcast before. The thing about conservation rates is you got to be careful, because they might work.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Reese, thanks again for coming on today. I thought you did a great job. It was always interesting to learn about these new things that are trends that are coming up and you know, segments of the market. So thank you very much for your time and sharing some of your knowledge.
No, it's my pleasure. Always happy to be here, and hope everybody has a great weekend.
All right. See you, Reese. Bye.
All right. Take it easy.
I always appreciate Reese Tisdale coming on and giving his advice. He always has a great way of putting it, and he's always got something interesting to say. So, Reese, thanks very much for that Bluefield on Tap segment brought to you from Bluefield Research. Really appreciate it. Before we get to the feature interview with Bill Brennan, just a couple housekeeping items, things I normally go over at the top of the show. If you are interested in, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while and or have enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving a rating and a review on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, whatever podcast directory you're listening on. Would really appreciate that. And also consider giving a donation to the Water Values, which will help kind of keep the lights on, help pay the hosting fees, both media and web, and, you know, pay for the other, you know, web registration, all that kind of stuff. So your donation can really help spread water knowledge, and we'll take it in any denomination that you're willing to give it in. So there's a little PayPal button on the website. You just kind of scroll down a little bit when you get on there, and you'll see the little yellow button on the right side of the screen. So would very much appreciate any donation you're willing to give. Thanks so much. Without further ado, here is Bill Brennan. So open the valves, fasten your seatbelts, and here we go. Well, Bill, thanks so much for coming on to the Water Values Podcast. Really appreciate you taking some of your time out of your day for this. For starters, could you tell us a little about your background and how you got interested in water?
Sure. It wasn't a straightforward path into the water business, but it was one of those things where directionally after my time in the Air Force, and then a few years at General Electric, I looked around the landscape and said I didn't want to be in the aerospace industry anymore. And I happened to come upon Lee Thomas and Andy Young, and they had just transitioned out of the government into a firm called Law Engineering Law Companies Group out of Atlanta, Georgia, and ended up working for them as my first environmental job, which put me in a deep dive into the water industry, both on the wastewater side and on the drinking water side.
Got it. So how did you use that experience to springboard into your current position? And can you tell us what you're currently doing?
Sure. Well, it was a long and windy road with regards to different iterations in the water business. From law, went on to Coopers & Lybrand on the environmental services practice side, and was a consulting into the environmental business, specifically around water utilities, back in the early 90s, which led to another career jump into the investment side, where I was an analyst covering the water business, the environmental business, the waste business, and environmental technologies, which were crossovers between both the waste and water business at the time in the mid to late 90s. And then from there, over the last 17 years, I've managed various investment products, both hedge funds, water rights, project finance, and in my present capacity, working with a number of family office institutions, foundations, as far as a strategy for water with a sustainability and impact wrapper around it, where people are interested to make the investment in water, but they're looking for market-type returns in the industry, and they may be, you know, unfamiliar with, you know, some of the nuances of the water sector. And so I'm working with them as far as creating a clear path to, you know, some type of sustained water investment program with them. So I'm working with a number of different funds, too, that are about to launch both as a venture capital fund, also as a sustainable model called Arena Holdings, where we'll be investing in companies with a sustainability and impact bent, but it'll be a company, not a fund, and, you know, turn that model on its head, because most investors now don't want to pay that 2 and 20 or 1.5 and 15. They're looking to make a direct investment, and a direct investment in a company that is in a holding company configuration with a focus on sustainable companies in water reuse, in, say, waste reuse around leather, tires, things like that. So it's broadened the scope from just water to everything that has a measurable impact and assets that are really focused on that reuse and making the most of the natural resource as an asset going forward.
You know, that's really interesting, because I've read a lot about the interest in green bonds and how that demand is increasing, exponentially year over year. And what's your take on this? Obviously, it sounds like it's the sustainability investing on the kind of the non-green bond side, but kind of in the private equity side is really booming. Is that, what's your take on all that?
Well, it's funny. I had the opportunity to speak at the Equilibrium Capital Conference in San Francisco last week, specifically on water. And my co-panelist was George Hawkins, the CEO of DC Water. And if anyone successfully has executed that green bond for green infrastructure program, it's definitely George and the folks at DC Water. And, you know, I see a proliferation of green bonds starting to take place But I think that will eventually morph into water-specific opportunities. And the green bonds that are now being used for either partial or all water investments will eventually become more acclimated towards blue bonds. And those blue bonds could be used for, you know, opportunities like a Watership Blue, you know, a company that's been formed by the former CEO of Abu Dhabi Shipping, and a few other water experts, Mark Lambert and myself, where we're taking a look and realizing that each ship could have its own dedicated blue bond, specifically around the delivery of potable water to land-based infrastructure from over-the-horizon ships.
Oh, wow. That's something outside the box. Could you tell us a little about what you see, not necessarily on the sustainability side, but just from just a current market investment in water, either whether it be infrastructure or what have you? What's the current state of the market in your eyes?
Well, you know, there's this whole renewed interest around water once again, and the thing is, I've seen this happen before over the years. Back in 2005, 2007 time period, you saw a real concerted interest among institutional investors around this type of investment, and unfortunately, it failed to deliver primarily just on the fact that you know, the water market at that time was not as maybe mature and ready for the type of next stage investing. And when I say that, you know, you take a look at the number of different opportunities that exist out there to invest in water, some of them around the equity space, but a lot of those industrials have morphed into, you know, much more than just water. They're more like, you know, more fluid mechanics type of opportunities. And the utilities still represent, you know, an absolute pure play to invest in water and own water. That being said, you know, these next iteration of investment opportunities, I think the market for distributed water projects is just about to hit, and maybe not so much in the P3 configuration of, as we define it as far as public-private partnerships, but more along the lines as far as private-to-private, where companies are taking the initiative without the regulatory hammer hanging over their head and saying, you know what, let's take a look at this from a cost-saving standpoint, and what can we do in order to improve our water footprint and take it down to maybe, you know, a neutral water footprint through water reuse and using specific types of configurations. As, you know, Sustainable Water comes to one as an example, where their water hub creates a significant reduction in potable water usage and wastewater discharge once fully operational. And if people are interested in something like that, they can take a look at the project that they completed down at Emory several years ago and has now been running for 2 years. You know, that is really the next gen as far as water investments from where I sit. And the opportunity clearly lies for, you know, the family offices, folks that are looking to say, no, I'd like exposure. I want to get into the water space. I'd like to do direct investments rather than have that market risk exposure. How can I do it? And companies like Sustainable Water are clearly, you know, I think, as I like to say, they've cracked the code to the next generation of water investment opportunities.
Yeah, and so you said a lot in there, and I'd like to break some of it down, and I want to get into P3 for sure, but let's go back to the, you said 2005,